Hi, and welcome to the podcast. My name is Father Bill W., Episcopal priest living here in Austin, Texas, with the gift of recovery going into my 48th year. And did that amazingly one day at a time. Just isn't any other way to kind of approach this thing. I hope you have visited our website. It's called Two Way Prayer. Go there and find the way they used to do prayer and meditation in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you find these podcasts helpful or the website helpful, please share that with someone. And if you have any comments on the series or something you'd like us to look into, please drop me a line. You can reach me at twowayprayer@gmail.com. Now, this is the first in a series of episodes related to Dr. C.J. Jung. And Jung was a Swiss psychiatrist who played a really critical role in the beginnings of AA. And the reason for this series is that I believe he still has a lot to offer us in recovery today. That Jung discovered and explored the inner world that we refer to as the unconscious. I got corrected a number of years ago. Somebody heard me saying subconscious, and they said, well, that's kind of a put-down, where the conscious is putting the unconscious down by calling it sub or below. I thought that was kind of interesting. So I always refer to it as the unconscious, and some 90 to 95% of our mind is unconscious. And if there's a place where the illness resides, where the unmanageability, the insanity that makes us go back to drinking or drugging or whatever the addiction may be, it's in that unconscious. And so we really need to visit that if we hope to do more than just stop the drinking. Perhaps you can do that, but God knows there's a lot of miserable people out there who have maybe stopped the drinking, but they haven't really changed. And the change happens at that much deeper level. Remember, the big book tells us that our drinking was only a symptom, that there's underneath the drinking a sort of soul sickness. And I believe that's a separation from God and from life. And Jung would bear me out in that belief. But that was his belief as well, that there's a vitality, that an energy that you could call God. See, I believe God is more of a verb than a noun, that we're in touch with him. And when we are in touch with him or her or it, there is a vitality that sparks within us. And if we don't have that connection, we suffer. It's the connection to the very deepest part of us. And that's what I think we lose when we fall into addiction. So, with that goal in mind, let's begin with the role that Jung played in AA. And in this first episode, I want to start with a really important series of letters written between Bill Wilson, the co-founder of AA, and Carl Jung. And I'll be reading them as we go along, and I'll be commenting on them. But you might want to get a copy so that you can follow along yourself. And if you will just Google Wilson Jung letters, you're going to find a number of websites that have the letters. They're real easy to find. And download them, and then you can kind of follow along. And maybe they'll answer some questions and raise some questions for you in regard to what's really at the depths of the illness we call addiction. So there's a lot to cover here. So let's begin with Wilson's letter to Carl Jung. It was written in January of 1961, just a short while before Jung passed away. Here's the letter as it begins. My dear Dr. Jung, this letter of great appreciation has been very long overdue. May I first introduce myself as Bill W., a co-founder of the Society of Alcoholics Anonymous. Though you have surely heard of us, I doubt if you are aware that a certain conversation you once had with one of your patients, a Mr. Roland H., back in the early 1930s, did play a critical role in the founding of our fellowship. Though Roland H. has long since passed away, the recollections of his remarkable experience while under treatment by you has definitely become part of AA history. So this connection with Roland and his story is told in the AA Big Book, that he was a chronic alcoholic, couldn't find recovery, and was finally referred to Dr. Jung in Switzerland and went under his care for a while. And this is the kind of the rest of his story. Having exhausted other means of recovery from his alcoholism, it was about 1931 that he became your patient. I believe he remained under your care for perhaps a year. Now, there's some questions as to how long and when Roland actually became a patient of Dr. Jung, but I want to make the case that that's not really that important. What is important is the underlying psychological and spiritual dynamic that his story tells us. That's the important thing. Sometimes you can get too deep into the history and lose sight of the transformation that is at the heart of this thing. And that's what Roland's story really represents. Back to the reading. His admiration for you was boundless, and he left you with a feeling of much confidence. To his great consternation, he soon relapsed into intoxication. Certain that you were his, quote, court of last resort, unquote, he again returned to your care. Then followed the conversation between you that was to become the first link in the chain of events that led to the founding of Alcoholics Anonymous. My recollection of his account of that conversation is this. First of all, you frankly told him of his hopelessness, so far as any further medical or psychiatric treatment might be concerned. Now, this word hopelessness, if you'll go back to the series we did on the steps and go to step one, that to me is the word that is missing from step one, and yet it is undoubtedly the message of step one. And here you get to see just how critical an in-depth experience of hopelessness is in order to find recovery. This candid and humble statement of yours was beyond doubt the first foundation stone upon which our society has since been built. Coming from you, one he so trusted and admired, the impact upon him was immense. When he then asked you if there was any other hope, you told him that there might be, provided he could become the subject of a spiritual or religious experience. In short, a genuine conversion. Psychic change is the word used in the Big Book. A change at the depths. And I think that really means at the depths of our unconscious mind, not at our conscious mind. I know everybody who wants to get over an addiction, consciously, they would sign a piece of paper saying, yeah, I quit, I'm done with it, it's over and done with. But we know that's about as worthwhile as the paper it's written on. It's not going to last because there's something at work deep inside of us that is working against us. And that's at the level of the unconscious. You pointed out how such an experience, a psychic change, if brought about, might remotivate him when nothing else could. But you did caution, though, that while such experiences had sometimes brought recovery to alcoholics, they were nevertheless comparatively rare. You recommended that he place himself in a religious atmosphere and hope for the best. This, I believe, was the substance of your advice. So Roland goes to see Jung for the second time, And Jung tells him, I'm afraid you're hopeless. I'm afraid that I'm not going to be able to help you. The thing that is likely to help you is a psychic change. Go and experience this. It's kind of rare, but it can happen, does happen, and alcoholics have recovered as a result of this. So that was the path that Roland began to travel. Shortly thereafter, Mr. H joined the Oxford Groups, an evangelical movement then at the height of its success in Europe, and one with which you are doubtless familiar. You'll remember their large emphasis upon the principles of self-survey, confession, restitution, and the giving of oneself in service to others. Sound like the program? They strongly stressed meditation and prayer. In these surroundings, Roland H. did find a conversion experience that released him for the time being from his compulsion to drink. There's some question as to whether Roland stayed sober. The evidence seems to be that he may have had a relapse or two. He never got into AA, but he did return to work, did maintain a membership in the Oxford Group for some time, but there may have been a relapse or two. Returning to New York, he became very active with the Oxford Group. Here, then, led by an Episcopal clergyman, Dr. Samuel Shoemaker. Dr. Shoemaker had been one of the founders of that movement, and his was a powerful personality that carried immense sincerity and conviction. At this time, 1932 through 34, the Oxford Groups had already sobered a number of alcoholics, and Roland, feeling that he could especially identify with these sufferers, addressed himself to the help of still others. One of these chanced to be an old schoolmate of mine, Edwin T. Ebby. He had been threatened with commitment to an institution, but Mr. H. and another ex-alcoholic OG member procured his parole and helped to bring about his sobriety. So there's the link in the chain. Roland gets sober through Dr. Jung and the Oxford Group. Roland then carries the message to Ebby, and Ebby is the one who carries the message to Bill Wilson. Back to the letter. Meanwhile, I had run the course of alcoholism and was threatened with commitment myself. It's important to remember that Wilson went to detox four times in a period of a year and a half. And when he finally met Ebby, it was between that third and fourth detox stay at Towns Hospital. And that is what began the hope in an individual who was experiencing real, genuine hopelessness. Fortunately, I had fallen under the care of a physician, a Dr. William D. Silkworth, who was wonderfully capable of understanding alcoholics. But just as you had given up on Roland, so had he given up on me. Boy, that's such an important line. That, if we put our faith and our trust in an individual, it isn't going to work. It's not deep enough. It's important to have great faith and trust in that individual, but that individual can't bring about the in-depth transformation that's really necessary for recovery. It was his theory, Silkworth's, that alcoholism had two components, an obsession that compelled the sufferer to drink against his will and interest, and some sort of metabolism difficulty, which he then called an allergy. The alcoholic's compulsion guaranteed that the alcoholic's drinking would go on, and the allergy made sure that the sufferer would finally deteriorate, go insane, or die. See, there's a cycle, a circle that happens in that first step. I think probably the most important words in the three steps are those three little dots that separate powerlessness from unmanageability. There's a connection there. It's not painted very clearly in the description, but that's the link. That's where hopelessness resides. So that my mind drives me back to drinking, and my body makes sure that once I pick up that drink again, it's going to kill me or drive me insane. Though I had been one of the few, he, Silkworth, thought it possible to help, he was finally obliged to tell me of my hopelessness. I, too, would have to be locked up. To me, this was a shattering blow. Just as Roland had been made ready for his conversion experience by you, so had my wonderful friend, Dr. Silkworth, prepared me. Our failure is perhaps the greatest asset that we have when we come into recovery. And the greater the depth of that failure, as it registers on my conscious mind, the better my chances of recovery become. Fascinating that the most hopeless are the ones who might indeed have the most hope, if it can register, if they can have that spiritual experience that is being talked about here. Hearing of my plight, my friend Edwin T. came to see me at my home where I was drinking. By then it was November 1934. I had long marked my friend Edwin for a hopeless case. Now, isn't that interesting? We can always see the guy next to us as being hopeless, but it's difficult for us to see that and feel that for ourselves. I can remember sitting in the bar late into the early morning and looking at the guy down the end saying, boy, he ought to be home with his family. I was single, I was drunk, and I was in as much or more trouble than he was in. Yet, back to Ebby, yet there he was, in a very evident state of release, which could by no means be accounted for by his mere association for a very short time with the Oxford groups. See, he could see something in Ebby's eyes. He saw hope. And the more hopeless you are, boy, does that make you attuned to seeing that glimmer of hope in somebody else. Yet this obvious state of release, as distinguished from the usual depression, was tremendously convincing. Because he was a kindred sufferer, he could unquestionably communicate with me at great depths. See, there's a link that one who has suffered, been chained in the cave of addiction, as Wilson later described it, that individual has a unique opportunity to carry the message to the one who is still chained in the back of the cave. I knew at once I must find an experience like his or die. Again, I returned to Dr. Silkworth's care, where I could be once more sobered up and so gain a clearer view of my friend's experience of release and of Roland H.'s approach to him. Clear once more of alcohol, I found myself terribly depressed. This seemed to be caused by my inability to gain the slightest faith. Critical lines there. That line between hopelessness and hope is very, very thin. So Wilson had it for a while when Ebby first came to him, but then when he got into the hospital, he lost it again, and the fear and the terror and the desperation increased because he didn't have the faith. Edwin T. again visited me and repeated the simple Oxford Group's formulas. Soon after he left me, I became even more depressed. In utter despair, I cried out, "If there be a God, will he show himself?" Connect. Will I feel that connection? There immediately came to me an illumination of enormous impact and dimension, something which I have since tried to describe in the book Alcoholics Anonymous and in AA Comes of Age, basic texts which I am sending you. My release from the alcohol obsession was immediate. At once, I knew I was a free man. Shortly following my experience, my friend Ebby came to the hospital bringing me a copy of William James's Varieties of Religious Experience. The book gave me the realization that most conversion experiences, whatever their variety, do have a common denominator of ego collapse at death. Whoa. Meditate on that line, that there is a common experience, and this is William James, the father of American psychology, who tracked and sought to understand any number of spiritual experiences that people had throughout history, and he was trying to see what was it that was common to them, and what was common was this inability to move beyond a certain point. Can't get over it, around it, through it. It's the dark night of the soul, as John of the Cross called it. It's that calling out to God for help, that connection that only God seems able to provide. The individual faces an impossible dilemma. In my case, the dilemma had been created by my compulsive drinking, and the deep feeling of hopelessness had been vastly deepened by my doctor. It was deepened still more by my alcoholic friend when he acquainted me with your verdict of hopelessness respecting Roland H. If you're feeling hopeless, hang on. You're on the edge of something really, really great. So don't rush through it too quickly. In the wake of my spiritual experience, there came a vision of a society of alcoholics, each identifying with and transmitting his experience to the next, chain style. If each sufferer were to carry the news of the scientific hopelessness of alcoholism to each new prospect, he might be able to lay every newcomer wide open to a transforming spiritual experience. This concept proved to be the foundation of such success as Alcoholics Anonymous has since achieved. This has made conversion experiences, nearly every variety reported by James, available on an almost wholesale basis. Our sustained recoveries over the last quarter century number about 300,000. In America and through the world, there are today 8,000 AA groups. So to you, to Dr. Shoemaker of the Oxford Groups, to William James, and to my own physician, Dr. Silkworth, we of AA owe this tremendous benefaction. As you will now clearly see, this astonishing chain of events actually started long ago in your consulting room, and it was directly founded upon your own humility and deep perception. It was so critical that he said to Roland, "I can't help you. A spiritual experience could help you. Go find it." Very many thoughtful AAs are students of your writings. Because of your conviction that man is something more than intellect, emotion, and $2 worth of chemicals, you have especially endeared yourself to us. How our society grew, developed its traditions for unity, and structured its functioning will be seen in the text and pamphlet material that I am sending you. You know, it's kind of interesting that Roland, being a somewhat typical alcoholic and grandiose in many, many ways, had initially sought to get help from Sigmund Freud and tried to get an appointment with him, but Freud was not taking patients at that time. And so he went for, quote, the second best under the help of Carl Jung. And had it not been through Jung and his belief in the spiritual, in the power of the spiritual as a healing element that can be tapped, that can be connected to. If that hadn't happened, I don't think we'd be having this conversation or this recovery that we're sharing to this day. You'll also be interested to learn that in addition to the spiritual experience, many AAs report a great variety of psychic phenomena, the cumulative weight of which is very considerable. So what he's saying there, and Wilson was a great believer in the psyche, as was Jung, and psyche is a word for soul, and the soul is greater than just the ego, just the ego mind. It is the conscious and the unconscious. That's the psyche. And it's also the collective unconscious. And we may get into a little bit of that as we move along. But it is the coming of the individual to find connection with this world, this spirit world, that is really the agent that brings about in-depth recovery from addiction. So our members have, following their recovery in AA, been much helped by your practitioners. A few have been intrigued by the I Ching. It's a book of Chinese expressions and formulas that kind of link the individual to the psychic, to the spirit world. A few have been intrigued by that and your remarkable introduction to that work. Jung wrote an introduction to that, which is also available online, and it's well worth reading. So he says in closing, please be certain that your place in the affection and in the history of the fellowship is like no other. So good way to begin, an introduction to Jung, his inner world. We're going to explore that in the next episode. We'll be taking a look at the response that Jung wrote to Wilson almost immediately upon receipt of his letter. And so I hope you'll find this series interesting. As many of you know, my main interest is in two-way prayer. And that's what I feel called to bring out, to get out to people who are in 12-step recovery, because it's something that's been lost. But at the depth of that two-way prayer is, I believe, an introduction to this inner world, to this spirit world. So it's not simply listening to God. It's also going down into the deeper parts of self and finding some of the things that have been hidden away there and that need to really see the light of day. So yeah, we've begun. I hope you will join me on this journey. I think you're going to find it tremendously insightful and helpful, not because of me, but because I'm going to do my very best to try to make some of Jung's ideas and concepts simplified and that you can begin to understand them and put them to work in your own recovery. So thank you so much for listening. Hope this was helpful. God bless and keep coming back.